Hello. In this recording, we'd like to talk about several things related to June 29th of 2023, which happened more or less a couple of days ago from the time of this recording. And we will try to explain why it's important to talk about that date. And just to give you a general context, in these last few days, I have felt the darkness in the country, in America, grow darker. I don't know if the word is darker, but there's a more sinister quality to it. It's as if when you walk outside, there's that darkness threatening to attack you more openly than it had before. You know, for example, in my case, I've had cars almost running me over. And with me having the right of way, but them trying to force themselves and almost trying to kind of prove that they can do whatever they want, even if they don't have the right to. So I've had that, and on Friday, which was yesterday from the time of this recording, June 30th, on that Friday, I had a very unpleasant experience during my lunch break. And I can see it even, I feel, I don't know why, people stares everywhere. It's as if there's this awareness that I am there and I am not wanted. It sounds paranoid, but, I find it strange because I'm just walking, minding my own business, and then people start staring at me out of nowhere. And I look around and go, well, why are they staring at me? And then I had this very unpleasant incident that I think I'll not get into too many details about that. It had to do with a black bastard smoking cannabis. It happened around a time when I was relaxing and I was listening to music. And then a song came on. And I said, oh, let me just enjoy this song. It was a Janis Joplin song. And I was about to get into this, you know, relaxation, just hearing the song and enjoying it, you know, sitting outside, when suddenly a black bastard started walking towards me. He went past me. He almost, like, was looking in my direction and just walked past me, very close to me, and sat, like, 5 yards behind me. And started smoking cannabis, and I felt the smoke exactly at that moment when I was about to enjoy this song that was coming in, you know, in the, I was listening to music from my phone, and then for 20 minutes he just kept blasting away, and the sad thing is the wind was blowing exactly from him towards me. That happens a lot. I have noticed for some strange reason, the wind seems to kind of cooperate with these bastards. And it's a reflection of the atmosphere. The American atmosphere is just evil now. And I started cursing out loud. I mean cursing in the literal sense of the word. Cursing the bastard out loud, very loudly. And I felt it felt very uncomfortable because there were a lot of people outside, and you know, they must have all thought I was crazy, but I was cursing you know, the marijuana bastards and cursing them, saying they should have been aborted, they should have never been born, black marijuana lives do not matter, and I keep saying that over and over again, because it's to emphasize that a life does not matter based on the color of your skin. It matters on whether, depending on what you do with that life. That's what makes it matter. It just doesn't all matter automatically just because you're black or whatever the hell color you claim to be. And I know that that son of a bitch is going to be dead in a year or two, maybe a year, because the more he continued, the shorter his lifespan became. And I kept ordering him to continue puffing, because you know that he was my slave as he continued to puff, and I kept saying that real loud, so that he could hear it. And the thing is that I know that with every puff that he took, his life was shortened and shortened, and death is coming to him and his family. And I do believe that he should have been aborted. His mother would have committed a great crime in having aborted him. But the thing is that by giving birth to him and then raising him to be the son of a bitch that he is now, she has done more harm to humanity than if she had just murdered the fetus before being born. So it's a life that does not matter. It's a useless life. And that is a reflection of what's happening in Black America. Black America is dead, just as America is dead. So whilst I and other people, I guess, are kind of sounding the alarm, signaling what is coming, doing the work that these people should have been doing, on the watchtower, watching and discerning the seasons. Whilst I'm doing that, they're just puffing away, and acting with a sense of entitlement, and destroying themselves and destroying everybody around them. And I can feel the violence, and it's not just black people now. I feel it in white people. And it's a collusion. Interestingly, that black son of a bitch, when he went to sit down behind me, sat with a next to a white, I think she was white, I'm not sure, white or Hispanic, I have no idea. She was who was already sitting behind me, 5 yards behind me. So apparently they were friends or whatever. And they were talking and talking, and she had apparently no problem with the son of a bitch smoking cannabis. And I had the same experience, a similar experience the day before with a white whore who was smoking cannabis out on the pier during my lunch break. But she would stop. I would speak out loud and she would stop. Then she continued like an hour later. And staring at me with defiance as if to say, will he speak up again? So the thing is that the evil in the country is just growing. And by the way, I just saw a few minutes before this recording that a headline about marijuana or cannabis being legalized in Maryland as of July 1st. So in Baltimore, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. So it's sad to know that Maryland is gone now, also with this cannabis stuff. So the country there's evil, there's a darkness, and it's not just darkness now, it's a sinister, more sinister darkness. It's evil. The country is becoming a third world rubbish bin. That's what basically it has become now. So we wanted to talk about the significance of June 29th a little bit. But before that, we'd like to kind of add a few things or clarify a few things related to the previous audio snippet. There was one thing that we wanted to get to last time, and we just ran out of time. But we'll try to share it now because I believe it's important to mention it. And it had to do with the Chinese spy balloon that had, as you may recall, gone through American airspace. I think it entered the Continental 48 and in Montana. I think it went up to Alaska and then it went down into through like slightly cutting through Canada and into Montana, if I'm not mistaken. And then it started going through this path and went over a whole bunch of U.S. Military sites, including missile sites, and it ended up going entirely across the country. And we all knew it was going across the country, and no one did a damn thing about it, just going across the country. It made it to South Carolina, and it after it had finished its mission, then Bite Me decided, oh, let's shoot it down. because obviously, you know, he had already received his commission with Hunter, I guess, on the side. And there was no need to, you know, leave it afloat anymore, because obviously, you know, it had already completed its mission. So just for optics, he shot it down. And interestingly, if I remember correctly, because we were going to talk about that when it happened, but I don't think we did get to it. I vaguely remember that the place where it was shot down was right off of a place called Surfside Beach. And I could be wrong on that, but it was a place in South Carolina, kind of almost bordering with North Carolina. And it used to be a, from what I recall, that area, that place where it was shot down. It was not shot down over that place, but as it finished crossing that place and going into the Atlantic Ocean, that's when it got shot down. But the thing is that that place, Surfside Beach, used to be a big plantation. It had a long history of slavery, and to me it was like almost like a fitting ending for this balloon to signify conservatism, to signify federalism, to signify you know, these beliefs in you know, South Carolina is about as isolationist as you can get. There's a strong trend there of oh, let's secede from the country and be our own little place because the rest of the country is so evil. It's always in this mindset that, oh yeah, we know how to do things right, and let's just be our own little island and isolate ourselves from the rest of the world. And that's what conservatism is going towards now, especially as the country is falling apart. Instead of realizing, well, there was something wrong with the foundation, everything that's going on is the result of us never changing or correcting the foundation. So that's how the country will end. And it's fitting that the balloon ended there. Now, the thing is that the reason why that was in my mind was that when I saw the first part of the X that we were talking about, there was this total eclipse that went through the U.S. diagonally in 2017, and there's one coming in 2024, and we talked about that in detail before. Well, when I saw the image of the first diagonal of the X, you know, the path of the 2017 eclipse, it reminded me of the path of the balloon. It may not have been the exact, you know, path, but it was more or less the same direction. And to me, that was a confirmation that of something, because I was having doubts in my mind. Well, maybe this X is a representative of the matriarchal system being X'd out, and that's why the center of the X is in Southern Illinois. But then there were two factors that kind of went against that thinking. First, the fact that the X, the center of the X, is not over Northern Illinois or the Chicago area. It's over Southern Illinois, which represents a place of refuge from Northern Illinois. That's how that part was came to be known as Little Egypt, because a long time ago in the 1930s or at some point, there was this big drought in Northern Illinois, and people would go to Southern Illinois for provisions in the same way that people would flock to Egypt during the days of Joseph, according to the Bible, to have supplies. So if it was that X symbolized the ending or the exing out of the matriarchy in America so that a new nation could arise, then the X, the center of the X, the crossing, would have been over Chicago or northern Illinois, not over the part that of Illinois that people fled to from, you know, to flee the matriarchy, the effects of the matriarchy, and to go to a place where there was a righteous person ruling. But remember, if you look at, you know, in the Bible story about Joseph, Joseph was a righteous person in Egypt, but he was not ruler forever. He was there for a season, and he served as a protection for the righteous, you could say, in the midst of hard times, to hold things in place. But eventually he died, and then the Israelites, his descendants, his fellow countrymen, you could say, went into slavery and went under bondage for 400 years. So the Joseph solution was temporary, and in the same sense, it's as if this country was being held together because of the Josephs in this land, the truth seekers who were holding the ground, providing the substance to hold this nation together in an invisible way, holding it together until it decided to make the permanent change. But instead of making the permanent change, it just said, "Oh yeah, we're fine," and that's why now that option to have a place of escape from this evil is going to be crossed out, and there's going to be no place to escape to. So that's one reason why that X does not mean the end of the matriarchy, but instead it means the end of of a place of refuge, because the Josephs will be taken away from this land. And the other thing is that it's as if, you know, the first X was first part of the X was drawn in 2017, and then a balloon came going around the same path, going diagonally from northwest to southeast across the United States, a Chinese evil spy balloon coming across the same path, as if to redraw that that first diagonal, if you catch what I'm trying to say. But to emphasize it, this is being drawn in evil, not in righteousness, but in evil. And that's why, to me, the X does represent the crossing out of the country, because of how it has allowed evil to just flourish. And that's why that, you know, that balloon just, you know, with impunity, total impunity, was able to spy across military sites all over. It went through a whole bunch of military locations. It was clearly being directed. There's no doubt that thing was deliberate. And they shot it down. And then apparently I saw a story on the 29th, I think it was, on the Daily Mail. Let me just go to it very quickly. If I can find it here. Let's see. It says on the Daily Mail, it's a story posted on the 29th of June by a fellow named Noah, N-O-A without the H, Half. It says, "Chinese spy balloon that hovered over U.S. for weeks was using off-the-shelf American-made technology to collect photos, videos, and other information," report reveals, after Beijing claimed it was just monitoring weather. So you know, they shot it down, and they were they've been able to ascertain that it did have, you know, spying equipment, I saw this story that I wanted to also get to before about Bite Me apologizing to the Chinese son of a bitch in Beijing for having shot down the balloon. So not only did they, you know, it's like somebody ramming, imagine someone ramming a car through your house, and then you kind of punching out the tires to make it stop. and then apologizing to the car, to the driver for having ruined the car's tires. That's basically what it is. But obviously, you know, Bite Me is on the payroll, so he was obviously going to apologize. And I think it's all for show, because at the end it was all coordinated. He needed to shoot it down, you know, for political optics, because it looked pretty bad that he just let it go through unscathed. So he had to do it at the end. So I think his boss understands that he had to do it. So it's just all pantomime. That's all it is. So I want to quickly mention that... the apology, I saw that headline, I think around the 29th as well, but I think there was another story on the 16th of June on townhall.com that said Biden regrets shooting down Chinese spy balloon amid close relations with the communist country. So he's been apologizing for a while about it, but on the 29th, the story came out that, you know, it did have you know, spying equipment on it. The balloon apparently entered American airspace on the 28th of January of 2023 and was shot down on February 4th. That's one thing we wanted to clarify about what we had talked about in the previous recording. But the second thing we wanted to also talk about very quickly, I hope, is about the cash issue, the money supply thing that we talked about, and the national debt. We had mentioned, and I hope the number is correct, but it's around $2.3 trillion, if not more, of cash that is of hard, literal dollar bills that are in circulation currently at the time, around the time of this recording. And we were contrasting it against the 14 or, I'm sorry, the 35 trillion dollar debt, and the fact that we are going into $2 trillion deficits year after year. So we were talking about the irony of how it's as if the government is taking every single dollar that is currently in circulation and borrowing it, and then coming the next year and doing the same thing again, and taking all that money and borrowing the entire amount, and then borrowing it again year after year after year. But one thing I wanted to clarify about that is, or kind of emphasize, and maybe you already were aware of this, but I just wanted to share this, is that it just begs the question, what is the real amount of money? What is the real money supply? So let's take the $2.3 trillion in cash and contrast it with the fact that the American GDP, and I could have this number wrong, and I apologize if I have the wrong number, but in my head, for some reason, I always think that the national GDP in America is about $14 trillion per year. Could be more, could be less, I could be way off, but I believe it's around $14, $15 trillion. I would beg the question, okay, how can it be that we have an economy that produces $15 trillion in goods and services, and we only have $2.3 trillion in hard cash? Pardon my French, but how the hell can that possibly be the case? Now the question that becomes, which of the two numbers is real, is more real? So think about it. The 14 or 15 trillion, whatever the number, actual number is, of GDP, is a number that comes out of adding up goods and services that happen in the economy. It's more or less an objective number. It totals, it takes into account economic activity, and it totals up to a number of 14 trillion. It's a reflection of economic, direct economic activity. Now, where does the number 2.3 or whatever it is, trillion dollars, come from? And if you think about it, that number is, it comes out of the butts of the people on the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury. They coordinate. The U.S. Treasury coordinates with the Federal Reserve, and they print money at, you know, according to their plans. So why are there $2.3 trillion in circulation? Because that's what the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury have decided. So if you have to question which of the two numbers is more real, clearly the 14 or whatever trillion dollars of GDP is real, whereas the $2.3 trillion of circulation is made up. In other words, the money supply is not $2.3 trillion. Yes, that's the amount of printed dollars out there, but that's not the real money supply. Otherwise, how in the world can we have an economy that is generating $14 or $15 trillion of goods and services year after year after year if we only have $2 trillion of hard cash? So that means that we have been artificially keeping the money supply short. And that's why you have the Federal Reserve doing this dance of the banks borrowing from each other to maintain bank reserves, because it's the as we keep saying, it's the short blanket syndrome. You know, we cover the head and uncover the feet, and then we cover the feet and uncover the head, and we're going back and forth in this wasteful activity of it is wasteful economic activity. All the time and effort that goes into all this interbank borrowing and all this nonsense, and then having the Federal Reserve think that they have the responsibility to jumpstart economic growth or stop inflation or things like that, when none of that. And why do they have all that power? Because they have maintained the money supply very short, on purpose or not on purpose. That question doesn't matter to me. The fact is they have maintained the money supply very short because that empowers them. There would be no need for all this Federal Reserve nonsense if the money supply was real in accordance with economic activity. And that's why we have talked about how we need to increase the real money supply, you know, the hard cash money supply, or physical, not real, but physical money supply in accordance with GDP growth. And if we had that as a constitutional objective measure, then the money supply would start growing accordingly, and then we'd get out of this short blanket problem that has been stunting economic. That's why we have had to do this sideshow of generating money that the conservatives keep claiming, oh, it's virtual money, it's made up money, but it's money that has been had to be created, you know, in this lending system that we have, because the money supply is inherently stunted. It is artificially kept low. And that's why we've had to resort to this. And that's why we've been able to function. But it's like a dysfunctional functioning. It's like a family that's dysfunctional, but it's like functional enough to keep going year after year. But there'll come a point when everything will collapse, because the dysfunctionality just cannot continue forever. So that's why we need to have a system where we start printing actual dollars in accordance with GDP growth, and then put it back into the banking system in the ways that we've described before. And one thing we wanted to clarify is, as the previous recording was finishing, I realized, oh, that's the thing we have not really clarified too well, is that when we, you know, it would be under the new American Constitution, there would have been, thing where the money supply will increase by the amount of GDP growth. So the, and I'm not sure if it should be percentage-wise or literal. I do believe that at the beginning it has to be literal to kind of have the money supply catch up, and maybe eventually will become percentage-wise. So what I mean is, if the GDP grows by half a trillion, I'm just making up a number, half a trillion dollars from one year to the next, maybe we need to inject what half a trillion dollars of money supply, of literal printed money, into the banking system. But then eventually, as the money supply catches up, then it can become a percentage. In other words, if the GDP grows by 2%, we increase the money supply by 2%. But that technicality aside, the thing is, that money, as we've explained, would go into the banking system in these special pots that are. So the bank is the every bank would be allotted a portion of that increased money supply and said, okay, you can take this money and you can not use it for your own benefit. You cannot use it to build a new building, a new branch, or whatever. You have to use it to lend it to your customers for loans. And so the money would go out as investment in loans issued by the banks. But the question then becomes, what happens when the money gets paid back? Is it the banks to keep or what? And the answer to that would be that the banks would get to keep it, but it's in quotes. But as the payments are made on those loans issued from that pot, that special money supply growth pot, MSG, money supply growth pot. So out of that MSG pot, as the loans get paid back, then that money should be distributed proportionally across all the deposit accounts in that bank. In other words, the money would go into the people's pockets, but only after it has been successfully paid back. So if you catch my drift. In other words, people will have that money available in their bank accounts to spend, but only after it has been invested somewhere. So that would prevent, you know, so in other words, this money is not being given to the banks. It's given to the banks to lend out, but then eventually it will end up in the bank account of citizens, of the citizens. In you know, so that would mean that your bank account would increase, would get this you know money added to it every year from investments of this MSG pot from previous years. And then you can start spending it. But the fact that it's already gone into the economy and created a company, created new goods and services, that means that that money is not going to be just there for spending and just trigger inflation. It will have gone through the process of creating something in the economy and then be added to your pot. And then you'll have this thing, the incentive where, oh, if I have money in this bank, I can, you know, just like in the old days where we would gain interest from our savings account, I don't know, but I could be wrong. I remember, I could be wrong with this, but I vaguely remember as a kid that if you had a savings account in a bank, you could get decent interest on it. Now you just get crap. Pardon my French, but you just get crap. It's, you know, I have a small savings account, very small, because I don't get to save much, but I literally get 10 cents of interest, 10 or 15 cents of interest per year. And it's not like I have $1 there. You know, I have a small amount, but it's not, I'm not going to say how much, but it's not $10 or $100 or, you know, it's much more than that. But not too much more. But the thing is that it's, how can it be that I only get 10 cents a year of interest, money that I don't move. I don't even touch that savings account. I get forced to put money into it through automatic transfers every month. And it's been growing slowly over the last 10 years. And I think if I add up all the interest over the 10, 20 years that I've had it, I add up to $10 or $15 over. How can that be? So this money from the MSG pot would be kind of to make up for that. You know, it would be an incentive for people to have money in the bank, because that when you put money in the bank, you make it available for investment. And that's the problem that we had in the Great Depression, and when we were stuck with the gold standard and we had the basic distrust of the economy, that no one was putting money into anything because everybody was afraid of everything. So that's why the economy began to collapse. And on top of that, and because of the gold standard and all that, we started having deflation. And when you have deflation, you have no incentive to put money in the bank. It's also a disincentive to investment, because a bank, you know, if the money grows in value because of deflation, then if you lend out $1, when you get paid back that dollar, it's worth more than what you, how much was lent out. So it kind of distorts the borrowing process, and it makes investments more difficult. Why would you want to put money in a bank? You keep it, and you know it's going to grow in value. So the thing is that having the money supply grow and have people's bank accounts grow as the economy grows will incentivize people to continue putting money into the banking system and having it available for greater investment. It can be lent out, and the economy will continue to grow and prosper. It is a kind of like almost a virtual machine, virtual cycle of growth. And that's what we would have had if we had eventually entered into a new era in America. Eventually, we would have adopted this idea, and we would have had perennial growth for decades and decades and decades. And but all of that is over. The economy is going to collapse. And I keep saying 30 years in my head, but it could be faster than that. Once the country dies in less than 3 months, a little over 2 months or so, between 2 and 3 months, it's going to become a third world country, but it will still have, you know, the infrastructure of the economy, the current infrastructure. It will continue to kind of produce apparently for a while, but it will eventually collapse. And I see the decay coming over 30 years, but it could be much faster than that. I think it's just going to be fast enough for the righteous people to kind of be covered and find a way to escape the destruction in one form or another. You know, and I think it that form of escaping, it depends on each individual. I think the country will, the economy will collapse, and America will go into the annals of history as another failed empire. That's sort of the two things we wanted to clear up, and I thought it was going to be like a 5-minute thing, but it kind of ran long. So the two things were the path of the Chinese spy balloon confirming that the X is a bad X, and a little more talk about the money supply situation. So now let's get to June 29th. This June 29th that happened a couple of days ago was very significant to me, and I had been looking forward to this day, but not like with great anticipation and joy. It was like when you know a significant date is coming, but you're looking towards it not because it's a wonderful day, but because it's significant, and it has a mixture of sadness to it. And the reason why I kept for years, kind of, I was aware in a sense about the importance of June 29th, 2023, was that, as some of you may know from reading the website where these audio recordings are posted, we always talk about a certain date, June 29th, 2003, and that was the day Latin America died. That was the day its calling was taken away, and Latin America was lost forever. June 29th, it was a Sunday, June 29th, 2003. And I remember that day vividly because I was awaiting something, and I knew that if it didn't happen, it would signify the end of everything for Latin America. And as I was waiting for that to either happen or not happen, I was just sitting there in this place by myself, and then suddenly the earth started to shake, and it was a strong tremor, and I found out that this bridge overpass thing that I think I've described before was strong, and that was like less than a mile from where I was damaged, and it was had to be kind of repaired over weeks, if I recall correctly. So it was damaged pretty badly. And it was a symbol of, okay, the bridge into this higher plane has been nullified. And then we talked about how that kind of correlated with this June 11th bridge collapse, overpass collapse on 95 in America on June 11th, 2023, 3 days after those three dark days of June 6th through June 8th that we described in detail in a previous audio recording. So, and that was like a symbol, okay, yeah, 3 days after those three dark days, we have that event that kind of resembled what happened on June 29, 2003 to signify the death of Latin America. And that was like, okay, this is clearly a sign we are going to, America's a nation, is going to die just like Latin America died 20 years ago. So, you know, June 29, 2023 is 20 years, exactly 20 years to the day since that day that Latin America died. And it's interesting that America's dying on, you know, in 2023, you know, the year of the 20th anniversary of Latin America's death. And interestingly, when I woke up on the 29th, one of the first headlines I saw was, when I looked at the headlines, was about an earthquake in England that happened, you know, a strong tremor that took place in England on the night of the 28th of June, 2023, at 20:21 or 8:21 p.m. UTC, which would have been 9:21 British summer time, because right now they're in Britain is in summer time, so that means they have they are 1 hour ahead of UTC. You know, just like we have in America, daylight savings time when we go ahead in the spring. In Britain, you know, Britain goes ahead one hour as well in the spring. Not exactly the same day as America, but around the same time. The thing is that around 9:21 p.m. local time, or 20:21 UTC, on the night of 28th of June, there was this strong earthquake in England. And so, and when I saw it, I said, interesting. Okay, so it was like some sort of confirmation, you know, because just like that earthquake or that strong shaking that I experienced that day, as I was there, all like on my knees, I was there, you know, waiting to see what happened on that day, to see what Latin America's future was going to be. You know, there was this strong earthquake or tremor, and the same thing happened in England. But I didn't realize until a few hours ago that the earthquake didn't happen on the 29th. But if you go online, basically all the stories about it are dated 29th of June, 2023. But that's because, you know, people reported on it the next day because it happened at night. And no one was sure because you, as you will see when I read some of the stories about it, it's as if people were taken completely by surprise by the trembling. And that's why it kind of took them like until the next day to kind of realize, oh, it was for real, and to report about it. So let me see if I can find the stories on this. I'm reading here from StokeSentinel.co.uk. So it must be a local website, a news website, StokeSentinel.co.uk. And it, the title of it says earthquake, and they put earthquake in quotes. I don't know why, but as if it was not real. But earthquake hits Stoke-on-Trent as residents hear huge rumble and houses shake. Updates. So it says multiple residents across Stoke-on-Trent and Staffordshire have reported feeling their house shake. Earthquake rocks UK city as residents report big rumble and shaking. And just so you know, Stoke-on-Trent in Staffordshire is in, I believe it's in the Midlands, in Britain. So it's kind of like a little bit to the north, and that's where it happened. And so let me just read here. Residents across Stoke-on-Trent, I already read this, and Staffordshire have reported feeling their houses shake amid unconfirmed reports that an earthquake has hit the region. So they were still like unconfirmed, like, oh, we're not sure. What was this? And they have a picture here, Hanley seen from the Smithfield multi-story car park. And that kind of reminds me of the car park that collapsed in Manhattan. So they have this picture of this car park over there, but it didn't collapse or anything, unlike the Manhattan car park that collapsed that we talked about in a previous audio recording. But then it says here, Stoke-on-Trent Live has received multiple reports that tremors were felt in the city and further afield at around 9:15 p.m. this evening, June 28th. People have taken to Twitter to ask if anyone else had experienced a quake. It's as if, like, did it really happen? You know, that sort of thing. It says here, one woman in Blythe Bridge, and I think that's significant, Blythe Bridge, said, I was relaxing in the bath when there was an almighty, and that's how she said it, an almighty noise, and the house seemed to shake. I honestly thought a lorry had hit the house. My kids came running, as did the dog, and I jumped out of the bath. Thankfully, there doesn't seem to be any damage. Another resident in, I don't know how to pronounce this, Bidulph, said, I was working at my desk and it started shaking. I thought it was the neighbors next door at first. Let me see here. And that's more or less how this ends here. But let me read another story posted on that same website, StokeSentinel.co.uk. It says, our house was shaking. Scary earthquake hit Stoke-on-Trent. Stokies. And when I read that, I started laughing because it sounds like a dog breed. I guess that's what people in Stoke-on-Trent are called, Stokies. But Stokies have described feeling their home shake during last night's earthquake. The 3.3 magnitude earthquake struck beneath Teen, T-E-A-N, at 9:21 p.m. on Wednesday, June 28th. Stoke-on-Trent Live has had reports of the earthquake being felt across the area, including in Teen. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing these names. Teen, Cheadle, Blurton, Basford, Bradwell, Bidulph, Trentham, and Weston Coyne. The British Geological Survey has confirmed it was the biggest tremor to hit the UK in the past 2 months. Now Stoke-on-Trent readers have described where they were when the earthquake struck. David Rayner said, quote, I felt it here in my high-rise flat in Stoke. I was sitting on the settee in my bedroom watching television when the flat shook for about 3 seconds. And some other people describing it. And then somebody said, Allison Rushton said, that was scary. The whole house was shaking. Pauline Lewis in Moss Green Village said, the cupboard next to me has glass doors. They shook and I felt my seat shape too. And then Nicola Moore added, my Nest camera has it at 9:21 p.m. It sounds more like an explosion than a quake, but I thought something had gone into the house. But other readers completely missed the drama and said some people didn't even notice it. But the thing is that, and to me this was very significant when I realized when it actually happened, even though I associated it with not 29th because the stories came out on the 29th, and that's when I saw it for the first time. It happened the day before, and at 9:21 p.m. British time, that was around 30 minutes after something very significant had happened to me here in Hoboken, New Jersey, on the other side of the Atlantic. Something happened, it's too long to explain, but I received a package from Britain, and I received it from Berkshire, England, which is a little bit to the south. It's to the south of Staffordshire. But the thing is that I received this very important package, very meaningful for reasons too long to explain. And I had been waiting for it. It had been sent out on the 20th, I think, or the 21st from the UK. It arrived the next day, on the 21st. And it got stuck here in customs. It went around the country, went to Tennessee, then it went to Indianapolis, then it came down to New Jersey, and Moonaki or whatever the name of the place is in New Jersey. And it was waiting and waiting and waiting, and it just was stuck. And until it was finally released on the 28th, and it was delivered to me. And there was problems because the guy came, I wasn't here. He claims to have rung the door, the flats, a number or whatever. And I was here, but I didn't hear it. I went out, and then when I was outside, he called me and said, I'm here. And I had to run all the way back from where I was at the pier, because I was on my lunch break, had to run and catch him before he left, and he gave me this package. And I received it in my hands at around 2:55 p.m. local time, New York time, which would have been around 7:55, because there's a 5-hour difference, p.m. local time. And so around 8 p.m. So, and then at 8:21, so it was like an interval of around 26 to 30 minutes after I received that package from the UK, that the earth shook in England. And then people saying it felt like something had come into the house. And to be frank, I'll just say it very briefly. When I bought this thing, I knew it was a symbol of me buying access into the land of England. And it's interesting that the earth shook 30 minutes after I had received this package, and people in this place were saying it's as if something had come into the house that we were not expecting. Something very impactful had come into the house. And I see that as a hopeful sign, at least personally. But I see it in a wider sense, aside of my personal life, as a symbol that yes, something has gone into England. It has kind of left America and gone into England. I don't know what it's going to do when it's there, but it's there now. It's been taken away. It's a symbol of it being taken away from America. America doesn't deserve it anymore. It's been taken away, and it's being put into England somewhere in storage. I don't know how, whatever, but it's there now. And because America did not appreciate what it had. And it kept going back to its old vomit, like a dog going back to its old attitudes and things. And I kept wondering, why Staffordshire? Why of all places, why was the earthquake in Staffordshire? And the only thing I could see, when I went to Wikipedia to look for information on Staffordshire, turns out that it just mentioned very briefly. I kept looking, you know, there's nothing interesting or nothing that could catch my attention. And then suddenly I saw that it was the place where a place called Britannia Building Society is headquartered. And it was interesting that it was important enough that the website, the Wikipedia article on Staffordshire felt the need to mention that. And I said, what is the Britannia Building Society? Now, you know, if you hear, you read that, you know, Britannia Building Society sounds like a construction company. But in reality, you know, a building society is the, you know, what a name given in the UK to like a financial institution. I'm reading here the definition on Wikipedia. It's a financial institution owned by its members. It's a mutual organization which offers banking and related financial services, especially savings and mortgage lending. So that's when you want to buy a house and or savings and stuff like that. And then it's interesting that, you know, we've been talking about lending and borrowing and all that. And so that's what a building society is. It's a financial institution. It's kind of like a credit union, but it's more directed towards mortgages and that sort of thing. And it says here, the Britannia Building Society was, I'm reading the, there's a Wikipedia article on the Britannia Building Society, was founded as the Leek and Morelands Building Society in Leek, which is in Staffordshire in England, in 1856. It expanded steadily as a regional society until the late 1950s when it began a major expansion drive. So it's kind of started slow for 100 years, and then it suddenly expanded. Maybe that's a figure of what will happen to England in a wider sense, partly through branch openings, but also some 55 acquisitions. And I think that 55 is significant, too. The most substantial of these were the Nalgo Building Society in 1960, the Westbourne Park in 1965, and the Eastern Counties Building Society in 1974. The society's name was changed to the Britannia Building Society the following year. And it says, following the acquisition of the Bristol and West in 2005, the Britannia became the second largest building society in the UK, based on total assets of £36.8 billion at 31st December 2007. So it, when it acquired Bristol and West in 2005, it kind of like leapfrogged into the second largest building society in the UK. And I think that's also very significant. Bristol is very spiritual relevant. And as some of you may know, that's where John Wesley and other people kind of started up. So it's a place of new ideas, of people thinking new thoughts, very, very relevant place. To make a long story short, what caught my attention is Britannia Building Society. The building of Britannia, and Britannia has a very, the name represents something very special. It's, when I think of England and Britain, when I think of the vision and the promises of greatness for that land, I always call it Britannia. I don't say England, I don't say Britain, I don't say the UK or, you know, or whatever. I always say Britannia. So it's interesting, this place is called the Britannia Building Society. The place where this company is headquartered, that's where the earthquake happened, as if to signify something has come into Britannia or will be coming into Britannia that will build the Britannia, the vision of Britannia in the land. And I think that's what that represents. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it. Now that we've mentioned that, the earthquake, the other thing we wanted to mention is that as I was watching, because I had nothing else to do, I was watching the Weather Channel. It's a Weather Channel. It's the Fox Weather Channel or something. And there was this lady, young lady, who was just talking and talking. But it was like, apparently she was the only one on call that day because she was there all day. I said, what a stamina, because she was there by herself and just going on and on with the map next to her. And she was describing everything, how messed up the weather is in America. And she kept talking about this weather pattern that stuck. And she kept saying the word stuck over and over again. It stuck. There's a high pressure pattern over this, over the middle of the country, kind of like going all the way down into Texas, you could say, in the middle of the country. And that is causing this strange jet stream going over it, into the mid upper Midwest, and you know, into Canada, then down into the Northeast. And that's why we've had this jet stream, wind stream of all the Canadian smoke from the wildfires coming into the Northeast because of that jet stream. And she kept saying it's stuck, it just doesn't move. And she says, I feel like a broken record because I keep repeating, I keep talking about all these tornadoes that are happening in this area, and you may say, that you've been saying that all this, like you're saying that all over again. And she was just trying to emphasize that she's repeating the same stories over and over again. Kind of like these recordings, you could say, repeating the same thing over and over again about, you know, tornadoes in this area and drought in this area and this, because the pattern is stuck. So it's like repeating the same thing over and over again in every area. And I think it's a figure of how America just became stuck. It's as if the truth was telling us, hey, you're stuck. You are stuck in this pattern of thinking, and you're not coming out of it, and especially the conservatives. You don't want to come out of it. And that's why the country is stuck and it's going to die because of it. And she talked about this derecho. And I said, what? And I know the only reason why I know what she was talking about is because it was printed on the screen. Derecho, a derecho that blew through Illinois. And I said, derecho. And I thought that was the name of a town, but then I looked it up and I realized, oh, derecho, it's spelled D-E-R-E-C-H-O. It's actually a Spanish word. And it means, derecho means right. The right side, you know, right. Or it can also apparently mean straight or direct. Derecho. And that's the let me just kind of read it very quickly here, if I can find it. There's a Wikipedia article on that. And a derecho, it's a fun word to say. A derecho is a widespread, long-lived, straight-line windstorm that is associated with a fast-moving group of severe thunderstorms known as a mesoscale convective system. But the thing is, it's almost like it's different from a tornado. It can have very strong winds, very powerful winds, but instead of moving in circles, it's like a straight line, like a front, like imagine like an army of soldiers stretched out along this long line, and all the soldiers marching straight forward, but next to each other instead of, you know, behind each other, if you catch my drift, like this front of people just coming, like, imagine like a locust, you know, this group of locusts coming, stretching across hundreds of miles and just going straight across, instead of a tornado, you know, where the wind is, you know, going around in circles. It's like, that's why they call it derecho, like straight. It's a straight front of strong wind just blowing across, and you could see it blowing, and they showed it in the map, blowing over the high, like going around the high pressure center over the top of it and going through Illinois with these powerful winds. To me, all of this is not why through Illinois, because Illinois is the center of the matriarchy in America. And derecho, also in Spanish, if I'm not mistaken, derecho also is a word that's used for law. Like if somebody says, I'm studying derecho in Spanish, it's like saying I'm studying law. In some countries, I think. I'm not sure if it's the same in all Spanish-speaking countries, but from what I understand, that's if somebody says, I went to university and studied derecho, you know, if they're speaking in Spanish and say that, then they're saying, I studied law. So it's the law the judgments and the law going across the matriarchy, coming to raise it, to bring it down, to destroy it. And the matriarchy is manifested in both the liberals and the conservatives. And that's why the country is dying. And in the meantime, there's been bad air quality, and I saw this story on the 29th as well of June, bad air quality hitting the mid-Atlantic states. You know, like there was like the severe air quality issue that happened on June 7th that we talked about before here in the New York area, where everything just went, the air went, was the most toxic since 1964, and you couldn't see a thing. You know, they call it the apocalyptic haze because you could barely see anything. Like the New York skyline was completely kind of almost wiped out. You couldn't see it because of all the smoke, how bad it was. Well, they kind of had something similar apparently on the 29th, but now in Baltimore, kind of where I grew up, and that's interesting to me that on a date very meaningful to me, you know, on the city that I grew up in, was hit by this. And so the mid-Atlantic is that part of the country, that's what they call the mid-Atlantic, you know, that Baltimore, Philadelphia, you know, southern New Jersey, Delaware, Washington, D.C., and Virginia, parts of Virginia, that's kind of what they call the mid-Atlantic in America, kind of between the northeast and the southeast, kind of in the middle of that, you know, of the east coast of America. And I know that's not a coincidence, because that is a symbol of, you know, the country is going to experience the same death that Latin America experienced 20 years ago. And that's why this was all happening on the 29th. And there, interestingly enough, Citizen Free Press website went down on the 29th. And I know that because I would go to it, and they had this, they had the links, but apparently they were having problems, and they had two links at the very top saying, we're having problems with our website, we're working on it, we've been working on it all day. And it was on June 29th. And the Citizen Free Press website is one of the three websites I go to all the time. I go to them less and less because it's becoming more and more irritating to read the stories, especially, you know, from the conservative perspective, because they're doubling down on their conservatism. They're becoming more and more toxic and more unbearable to read. It is just... But I still go there every now and then, but less and less. But the thing is, when I went there on the 29th, they had this headline, and I saw it fitting. It was very fitting, because of all the three websites that I go to, the one that is most, how can I say this, simplistic or kind of almost teenage-y about the whole thing that's going on with the country is this one, the Citizen Free Press website. Because they have these headlines where they go, literally, I'm not exaggerating, they go, bwahaha, and then when something bad happens to a liberal or something like that. And I have nothing against mocking when something bad happens to a liberal, or, you know, some victory for conservatives in some court case or whatever, or some liberal getting their comeuppance, you know, and I have no problem with that. But the fact that they go, bwahaha, And it's as if like a teenage boy, you know, kind of like laughing. And then when you read the story, it doesn't have the dimension of power of destruction that you would expect. It's as if, you know, the liberals had a minor defeat there or whatever, but it doesn't seem like a big deal. Nothing to laugh about. The country's falling apart. There's nothing to laugh about here. You see what I'm saying? You know, you laugh like that when you're standing over the enemy and you have your boot on his neck and you're choked and you're killing him and ending his life right there. And I'm speaking figuratively, obviously. And when you're destroying him and you're obliterating him, and that's when you start laughing. But not in these minor little things. And sometimes they have these headlines, so-and-so destroys so-and-so, you know, some conservative destroying a liberal. And then you go read the story, and there was this argument between a liberal and a conservative, and the liberals said all this stuff, and the conservative shot back with other arguments. And you read the debate, the exchange, and you go, well, this kind of ended like World War One, kind of trench warfare. No one won here. It's not like the other side just got obliterated and they went, oh yes, we were made a fool, and now you've exposed us. Nothing like that. It looks like trench warfare. But they talk about it as if they had this big victory. So this website represents this conservative attitude of exaggerating minor victories and not being because you have to exaggerate the minor victories to realize that you're to kind of avoid accepting how bad you are and that you need to change something. No. These little victories are validations that we are on the right path, that we are the derecho. We are on the straight path to victory. We have the truth with us. When the truth has been trying to talk to these deaf ears, conservative ears, and they just don't want to listen. So that's why their website was affected on the 29th. And interestingly, a few, not too long before this recording started, I went to their website, and somewhere on their, this was, on early hours of July 1st, they had a headline. One of the links said, "Tears in every CNN paragraph, we need to celebrate these rare victories." And you click on it, and it was a link to a CNN story where they were complaining about how the right conservatives are trying to change America through the courts. Like, oh my goodness, that's what liberals have been doing for decades. And now that there was this minor victory with this thing on the Supreme Court, not even worth talking too much about saying that these racial quotas at in universities for admission, that they are discrimination, and the liberals are up in arms about that because they believe in affirmative action and all that. Not worth even, I don't even care about talking about that because it's so irrelevant in the context of the greater scheme of things. Oh, nice thing. It's nice that they, did that vote and all that on the Supreme Court to strike that down, but universities are not going to heed that. I just saw a headline a few moments later after I saw that story when it came out first, and I think Harvard, I forget which big university, said, "We're going to continue doing it our way," and they're going to find a way around it. So, it's like what they call a Pyrrhic victory. It's a meaningless victory. Relatively meaningless, especially in the context of the larger problems. And it's nice that it happened, but the thing is that it's sad when you have to phrase it like that. So the link to the CNN story that was complaining about this, and there was also another victory on the Supreme Court. There was this guy, web designer, Christian web designer, who was refusing to do things for homosexual marriages, and he sued and he won that he has the right to say, no, I don't want to do that, which is kind of sad that we're in a situation right now where, no, you're going to have to be, whether you believe in homosexual marriage or not, you're going to do it, and you're going to promote it, and you're going to do it whether you want to or not. I mean, this is the fascist country that we are in now. So this very minor victory, so that's, I guess, what CNN was complaining about. I didn't even read the article. I couldn't care less. The thing is, it's so sad that the link said tears in every CNN paragraph. As if they are rejoicing at the... how can I say this? They think these are such big victories, and the liberals are so sad about it. As if they had just been there, like their cities had been wiped out and they are in utter devastation. Really? Is that how the dimension of the victory here? But aside from that, we need to celebrate these rare victories. That's how we are, trying to find a positive spin to our decay. Like, you know, instead of saying, no, we're doing something wrong, we're doing something wrong, let's fix, there's something within us that is not right, that's why it's not working. But no, they want to look for every little victory, every little thing, and then they blow it out of proportion. And that's why their website went down on the 29th, as if the truth was saying, shut up, stop lying to yourselves that you have it right, that you know what you're doing. You don't. You're losing. You're down 72-0, and you're just, speaking in American football terms, and you're happy you got a first down, or you're happy you just got a turnover. You're down 72-0 in the fourth quarter. What are you excited about? You know, it's like, and I've seen this, you know, when one team is down by a whole bunch and one of the players from the losing team has a great play and he starts dancing and celebrating and looks so ridiculous and everybody criticizes them. And, you know, especially conservatives are the first to criticize that sort of behavior because it tends to be done by what you would consider liberals, voting wise, and they're doing exactly the same thing right now, exactly the same thing, and that's why they were shut down. And the other thing is that I saw on the 29th another story, and let me just read part of it. One of the many headlines that came out that day. This is a very brief one, and I'm going to read, and I'm going to hold my nose as I read it because it's from NBC News, one of the most biased left-wing outlets in the country. But I'm just going to read this. It's a very brief one. It says, the date of it is June 29th, because that's when it started coming up. Thousands stuck at airports amid flight delays and cancellations. And it says here, June 29th, 2023, thousands of flyers are stranded at airports across the U.S. ahead of the holiday weekend, as many flights are being delayed or canceled. NBC News' Tom Costello has more details on the travel chaos. So they have a video, but I didn't even bother, didn't want to hear him, whoever Tom Costello is. But the thing is that these stories started coming out about delays, people being stuck. And then the weather lady saying, you know, there's a pattern that's been stuck and stuck for weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's the same message, you know, the country is stuck. And apparently these delays had to do with, you know, the wildfires, the weather, crazy weather going on that's causing delays across the country. And also the large number of people traveling, because, you know, the holiday that's coming is July 4th. And so all of this is happening as July 4th, Independence Day is coming. And this is going to be a very sad day, July 4th, the one that's coming in a few days, 3 days from this recording, because it's going to be the last July 4th America is going to have as a nation, as a living nation, a nation alive. Because, you know, it's almost, for all practical purposes, dead, but still technically alive. And July 4th is going to be the last real Independence Day that we'll have. And then it will be over. All the July 4th that will come after that will be meaningless because the country will be dead. There's not will be nothing to celebrate. There's no independence. There's nothing. The country will be enslaved to it, to its attitudes, to its idolatry, to its lunacy, and will be dead. This is the last one. It's such a sad day. And as this day is coming, it's as if the truth is caused, exposing all of this to show us that, don't you realize this is your last Independence Day? It's so sad. And the thing is, the other thing we wanted to mention, well, let me just mention this. I'm going to read from the Denver Post. Again, dated June 29th, 2023. It says, United Airlines troubles worsened at Denver Airport with more than 500 cancellations, 1,000 delays over 5 days. And it says, travelers flying in and out of Denver International Airport on Thursday again faced turbulence as United Airlines grappled with 87 more cancellations and 57 delays as of 9:10 a.m., according to the Flight Aware Tracking Service. United Airlines led all other airlines at DIA, accounting for the bulk of the total 211 delays and cancellation of flights in and out of the airport. Persisting air travel troubles even after United officials asserted on Wednesday morning that operations at DIA are fully staffed. And it says here, stranded travelers continue to struggle at DIA and other airports nationwide as widespread disruptions complicate summer vacations. And at DIA, United staffers on Monday set up 500 cots and relied on Denver Airport officials to provide blankets for people stuck in the airport overnight. United officials on Wednesday again set up cots in the airport. We're beginning to see improvements across our operations, blah, blah, blah. But so that's the state of things, you know, people being stuck and not being able to go where they need to go. And that's where the country is. It's stuck and it's not going to get to the promised land. It's not going to get to fulfill its destiny and its calling. And all of this happened on June 29th. And the other thing that happened on June 29th was that there was this big fire in Manhattan. So let me go to that story here. I'm reading from the GatewayPundit.com. It's one of those three conservative websites that I go to. It's this one, Citizen Free Press, and NOQ Report, which is got renamed to America First or something, or whatever. But it, I usually type NOQ Report, NOQ Report.com. News, opinions, and quotes. I think that's what NOQ stands for. But the thing is that this story on the Gateway Pundit, dated again June 29th, because that's when the incident happened. It says, fire breaks out at Tiffany & Company, located next to Trump Tower in New York City. And I know exactly where that is. So Trump Tower is like between 57th and 58th Street on 5th Avenue. And I used to walk by there all the time, and I always tip my hat at the building in honor of Trump. And I would see his name, and I would tip my hat to him. I'm upset with him. You know how I think, what I think about it. But I've always honored him, in especially, you know, before the 2020 thing and the virus nonsense. But I would walk by there all the time, and I'd say, I respect you, and I give you the honor that everybody else is trying to take away from you. Because more than him, it's what he represented. Despite his failings, I stopped going, I stopped walking in that part of Manhattan after the son of a bitch, so-called mayor at the time, in defiance, just drew, painted, wasted taxpayer money and city money, painting these black, huge Black Lives Matter words in front of the building. And he did it on purpose, like as if to say, you know, in defiance of Trump. It is disgusting. And I, ever since they painted that, I heard about it, never seen it, haven't walked that block since then, and probably never will again. Ever since then, I have not walked by that. But the thing is, I know where that is. I know, and this building is at the corner of 57th Street, on 5th Avenue, and almost right next to the Trump Tower. So it says here, fire broke out underneath the historic Tiffany & Company building, which is located adjacent to Trump Tower in Manhattan, New York. The fire caused heavy black smoke to cover 5th Avenue and resulted in over 100 people evacuating from the building. No one was seriously injured from the blaze, but two people were treated for minor injuries. FDNY fire investigators concluded the fire started from an electrical malfunction inside a transformer that serves the Tiffany & Company building. And then it says, There's a Sky News tweet here that says, at its height, 14 fire appliances and 80 firefighters were battling the blaze, which began in an underground utility vault, the FDNY said. You know, the fire department of New York, firefighting department or whatever. So it was a big blaze on the 29th, and 14 fire appliances and 80 firefighters battling the blaze, which started underground in the foundation of the building. Then it says here, let me continue reading here. The fire was reported shortly after 9:30 a.m. and was under control by noon. So it took them like 2.5 hours to get it under control. And smoke was billowing out from under the store. And it says here, the fire comes after Tiffany & Company spent over 3 years and $500 million to renovate its iconic building. And I didn't even know they had renovated, couldn't have cared less. But apparently there was this big celebration after 3 years when the building was officially kind of re-inaugurated. And I think that's what I read in some story, that they even had some big celebrities and singers come along. I forget some big names. I don't remember exactly who at this point, but they had these big people in this event to celebrate the reopening of this renovated building. Imagine $500 million to renovate a building, $500 million. Imagine how many pizzas you could have bought with that. So it was a big renovation for over 3 years. And then you have this malfunction and this big fire. And what does that all represent? It represents that despite all your efforts, despite your quote renovation, you think that you can come and bring in some clever little tips and tricks. But if you don't fix the foundation, it's all for naught. And it happened right next to the Trump Towers. If to say, hey, you think Trump, you know, sounds like the big innovator who's different from all the other politicians, and he's going to fix the problems, and he brings something new to the table, and you're investing all your efforts and your trust in him, and you're investing and say he's going to rescue us, he's going to rescue us, he's going to rescue us. Investing these $500 million of, you know, figurative currency into him. And that's all going to blow up in smoke, and it's going to be useless because the country's dead. And it'll happen on June 29th. Not a coincidence. I guess we wanted to talk about other things, but I think that will be... just as a final comment, it's something I had been wanting to share for quite a while, but we would never get to it because we'd always run out of time. But it's this story that is kind of, ever since it came out, it kept bothering me. And then I saw this recent story where it became official. Just to make it a long story short, people in New York, the Democrats in New York, the liberals, so it's not people, it's the animals in New York, the subhumans in New York, wanted to add a fee where if you cross, I think, 60th Street, if you went into Midtown, which I guess officially they marked as starting it on 60th Street, if you went... into Manhattan and into that Midtown area, even if you're already in Manhattan, if you cross 60th Street, you had to pay like $23. Imagine that, the stupidity of this. So they're going to set up this system. They wanted to set up the system where even if you're already inside Manhattan, you have to pay a toll to get into 60th Street. It's like Berlin kind of thing. So they're going to put a Berlin Wall toll booth of Berlin Wall fees because they want to decrease congestion. You know, the the talking points of liberals and oh, we want to reduce car and carbon emissions and all that rubbish that they always talk about. And what seemed interesting to me is that this thing had been held up, and you know how why it was held up? Because they wanted to do it from a long time ago, but it was held up in the legal system because the federal government was not allowing it. And to me, it's puzzling. I don't understand the details. I don't know the details, but it was puzzling to me why, if this is a local thing, why does the federal government have authority over a decision that seems to be very local? And I don't understand why that happened, but there must be some law somewhere where the federal government had the authority to deny that. And that at some point recently, apparently the federal government decided, yes, okay, the Bite Me people decided to let New York do its thing. So apparently it had been held up, but Bite Me and his gang of whores decided, okay, let's let New York City do that. It's an idea from New York, from Albany, from the whore who is in Albany right now, the so-called governor, and the local Democrats in New York City. But it was interesting because it kind of goes against the federalism, narrative of conservatives, because, it's always like we don't want the federal government interfering in local events. But isn't it interesting in this case, the federal government was stopping the local state government from implementing something that was very destructive. So it kind of flies in the face of federalism, the concept of federalism. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether the decision is coming from the federal government or the state government. The question is it right or is it wrong? And federalism clouds all of that because it creates these hierarchies where this government has autonomy relative to this larger government and this and that. It's a false paradigm. It's ironic that the federal government was saving New York City from itself. But because Bite Me is there and all his people, all the rubbish people surrounding him, all his caregivers that he has, they eventually let this happen. And this is going to destroy the city. And I'm going to read a story that came out and apparently was posted on the 27th of June. And I'm going to try to read it very quickly if I can get to it. So let me just, I had it, but apparently I lost it. So let me just pull it up very quickly. I'm going to read parts of it. It's a very long kind of opinion piece that was posted on the New York Post. It says, just going to read parts of it. It's by Michael Goodwin. He says, congestion pricing scheme is just another pothole on the road to New York City's ruin. It says, the headlines make it seem like a good thing by calling it a plan to reduce traffic in Manhattan. Who can be against that? But a more realistic way to describe the congestion pricing scheme scheduled to start next year is that it's another nail in the city's coffin. At a time when thousands of families have left for safer, cleaner, and saner pastures, charging people even more to come to the city amounts to an invitation not to come. So, and just by the way, I saw this story that I don't have the context of the numbers, but I saw that revenue for the state of New York has declined by 20%. And the revenue for the state of California, run by the moron Gavin Newsom, the worthless little pathetic moron, he's so pathetic. He's so laughable. He's a joke. And he's going to burn in hell and suffer as a joke. He's kind of Trudeau light, like Justin Trudeau in Canada. He's like that at the same level of stupidity and moronic, self-righteous, narcissistic stupidity. But the thing is that Gavin Newsom and his state of California have lost 20%, I think, of revenue, because these people are driving everybody out of these states. They're leaving in droves. So revenue's down, and now with this, it's going to be even worse. And then it says, and the thing they mentioned here, most buildings are nowhere near the pre-COVID full-time population, and congestion pricing will give reluctant workers another reason to Zoom it in. And that's true. You know, in New York, office buildings are still not full in full capacity because a lot of people are now working from home. And that has affected businesses, you know, in New York, restaurants and all that, because people are not in New York anymore. So they're not buying coffee in New York or buying their lunch in New York or anything like that. And then he says, start with the fact that nearly 50,000 migrants who illegally cross the Mexican border are living in Gotham facilities free of charge for as long as they want, many of them in Midtown hotels. Yet the commuters and outer border residents whose taxes support these freebies, those freebies, and who want or need to drive into Manhattan will be penalized up to an additional $23 a day for the privilege. So New York is a sanctuary city only for those who can't pay, while everybody else is to be gouged until they flee. That can't last. I think cab drivers were complaining because they were gonna get hit by the fee. I don't know if they came to an agreement about that, and the Uber drivers and all these other people, because it's like driving inside the city, and if you cross one street and go to the other side of the street, you're gonna be charged $23. And every time you go by, like imagine a cab, how many times it will cross that line when taking people to and from one side of Manhattan to the other. So I don't know if they came to an agreement about that, but regardless, it's ludicrous, and it's a sign that the city is under judgment. The city is cursed. I have cursed New York. And I've always seen it, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but just take this figuratively if you want. I have to explain to you why what I mean when every time I say this. But to me, this is my territory. This is my land. This is my area, my kingdom. This is my place. I own this land. And I am cursing it. It's like you own a building, and you've tried to repair the building. You've tried to do everything to it, but it just then you say to the people, hey, come out. I'm gonna move you to this other place. We're going to tear down this building and rebuild it because we need a new building here, and they don't want to come out. And you've tried to get them out of there. They don't want to come out. And it's like, okay, I'm gonna have to abandon this building and bring it to judgment. And that's what I've done to New York. It's like I've cursed it. I own it, but I'd rather have it destroyed and have all these squatters, all this filth that has filled this area, be wiped out, than own a land that is populated by all these worthless subhuman trash, rubbish. So New York is on its way to die. And I hope I get to see the day when I leave. But when I leave, it's going to be a sad day, either by death or by migration. I will leave this land, and it will be a sad day when I leave. And I don't know if I'll ever come back or want to come back. I think I will, but I will come back to a wasteland if I do. But the country is dying, the city is dying, and liberals go, oh yeah, New York, liberal hellhole, you stupid, worthless, conservative son of a bitch. And I'm sorry for saying it like that, but that's what you are. You don't understand, as New York goes, the country goes. You keep laughing. You think you're going to be happy in Florida and Texas. You think you're going to be okay down there in your little red reservation, you know, living protected from everything happening. No, you're going to get shot down too, because you are the reason why the country is dying. It's not the liberals. The liberals would have been wiped out You know, like Goliath, it looks impressive and everything, but you get a good slingshot. You know, you have good technique and you know what you're doing and you're guided by the truth. You can take down Goliath easily. And we would have changed the environment in this country. We would have created the greatest outburst of life and growth at all levels of life. In the history of mankind, it was within the reach of our hands. And you conservatives kept clinging to your Second Amendment, to your Constitution, and to your founding fathers' portraits, and your Federalist Papers, and all your worthless stuff. And you didn't realize, no, you had to let that go. But you didn't. And that's why you will have nowhere to escape. Nowhere to run, oh baby, nowhere to hide, as the song would say. And that's how you will have nowhere to escape. You're going down too, boy. You're going down too, conservative. All the red states, there will be nowhere to escape to or escape within this land. And I don't know with each individual person how it will be. Every truth seeker will find a way to have their own way to escape. Maybe not literally, not physically, but in my case, I think it is the only option left. I've got to go either by death or by migration. Because if I try to stick it out here, I'm going to get killed. I can feel the evil just growing and waiting to pounce on me, waiting to pounce on people like me, the truth seekers, to destroy us. Because this country is growing evil, and there will come a point where you can't even trust on the goodness of the white culture anymore, or the basic goodness that it used to exhibit. It's going to be declining and declining until it's all over. That's how worthless this country has become. And that's why we had June 29th, and all the things that happened on that day, on the 20th anniversary of the death of Latin America. And America's going to be dead too. And interestingly enough, June 29th is 3 weeks after June 8th. We had talked about 3 days, right? June 6th, June 7th, June 8th. 3 days after June 8th was June 11th, and we had the big incident, which I believe was the bridge overpass thing that happened on I-95 that we talked about. And I knew it. It's like, I remember when I was, I almost heard, you will see a confirmation 3 days later and 3 weeks later. And all the things that happened exactly three weeks after June 8th. If you add 21 plus 8, you know, 3 weeks, 3 times 7, 21 plus 8, gives you June 29th. And on June 29th, all these things happened to confirm that we are el finito. As they would say, I don't think they say that in Latin America, but we are as finito as they would be as they are in Latin America right now. Will be dead. America as a country will be dead in less than 3 months. It's coming, and it will be over. And this July 4th that's coming will be the last July 4th we will have. Any July 4th coming after that will be irrelevant. There's nothing to celebrate on July 4th, 2024. Believe you me, there will be nothing to celebrate because the country will be dead. Thank you very much for listening.